everybody. My name is Shannon Mondor. I created Fulfillment in Faith because I discovered that many people want and are desperately searching for help. People of all backgrounds, whether they suffer from an addiction or not, are contacting me. They are scared, don't know who to turn to, don't know what to do next, have no direction in life, and they are wanting guidance. They have searched me out due to my success story of how I battled addiction to alcohol, mental illness, suicide, and lived with an abusive past. I overcame my past and used my experiences to help myself and to gain knowledge on how I could help others to go forward and to find their greatness within as I have. With those tools, I gained confidence, strength, and freedom, and have since published a book, How in the Hell Did I Get Here? And I am a successful mindset and manifesting coach. I made that choice to help others with my experiences, as I have been where so many are right now. So welcome to my podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Mondor. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, and then we teach and help others. Today, I have a very special guest, Kamala Thompson. Welcome, Kamala. How are you?
I'm doing great today. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so pleased that you're here, Kamala. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, et cetera, et cetera? And then, you know, you can just go right into your story of time of stillness.
Sure thing. I'll be happy to do that. So I was born in a small town, Rust, Texas, raised in Jacksonville, Texas, both found in East Texas. And I grew up there, graduated, and then came here to Dallas where I currently reside. So I've been here in the Dallas area for more than 20 years. As I mentioned in my introduction, born and raised in East Texas. In the 1980s, children were seen but not heard. My mother was 15 and my biological father was 14 when I was born. My father was a Marine and committed suicide in August of 1991. My mother later married my dad, had more children, and divorced. After divorce, she moved here to the Dallas area to become a medical assistant. I want to take a little bit of time to actually explain the blessing that I had of having a father and a dad, because there are two different people to me. My father shared DNA. My dad is still currently sharing life lessons, supporting me and encouraging me, and has since I was 6 months old, even after divorcing my mother. My dad and family from both sides have provided for me growing up. In the 80s and 90s, family helped out a lot more than what you typically see these days. Most of the time, we're pretty much loners and kind of stick within the household. We don't know as much about extended family. But during that time, I was taught to respect my elders and to do only what I was told. I didn't talk back, and I didn't dare to question things out loud. Of course, I think as kids, we all will stammer under our breath, but you didn't question things out loud. I was definitely physically punished for misbehaving and embarrassing family. Fear was somewhat the motivator to keep us in line. There were many scare tactics that actually worked. I never confessed all of my deepest feelings to my parents because I was not even sure what feelings were at that time in my life. I felt I always had to be tough or appear that I was tough. We weren't mushy. We didn't give hugs and kisses and exchange I love yous. My family definitely skipped the conversations about the birds and the bees and puberty. Those were definitely uncomfortable conversations that maybe for the adults, I guess, to have with the kids, but they didn't happen. It was common to assume our parents loved us because they put a roof over our head and kept us fed and clothed. Growing up in a small country town, it was common to see women to just be wives and mothers, not really having careers and out in the workplace, not really having any goals or dreams of their own that they sought out and seeked, but just to merely support their husband, children, and any other family members that may have came along and needed any assistance. I feel that the women there in those small towns of East Texas were groomed to be people pleasers. When I got to those teenage years where we all have those phases where we're trying to explore and figure out who we are and the things we like, that time for me was very, no, I shouldn't say, I guess for me, for every all teens, it's a very vulnerable time in life. I was looking for attention and love in all the wrong places, which led me to being promiscuous. I got pregnant and gave birth at the age of 17, leaving me devastated and traumatized. He only lived 6 weeks.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh.
I thought that he was going to be all the love, attention, and affection that I was longing for all those years of growing up. Now, after losing him, or at that point, I was definitely determined to have another baby. None of those behaviors I was thinking through. First, just being a teen. Secondly, now, I'm losing what I thought was the answer to the attention and love that I needed. So, I'm looking to find that again. Because I, in my head, I'm saying, oh, I'm grown, so any advice or any suggestions that anyone may have been offering, I wasn't open to hear it or listen to, what they had to say. I got pregnant again, giving birth in 2004 and a third time in 2007. During those two pregnancies, I was in a long-term relationship. At this point, I'm feeling or thinking that I'm suffocating with love, affection, and attention. I have everything I've ever wanted and needed. I have two handsome sons and a loving and a very understanding mate. Tragedy strikes. And in 2011, he passed away at the young age of 29 from a brain aneurysm. So I'm 26, and my sons that are still living were 7 and 5. This definitely was a trigger. Being, without my mate and having to be a single mom to my two boys, I went back down that road of promiscuity. That lasted from about June of 2011 to maybe November of 2015. I had some ups and downs and some very toxic situations. Some of them were intentional because I didn't want to love or to be loved. After losing such a caring and understanding mate, at that time I felt like, you only find your soulmate once, and I felt like he was my soulmate. So that's a pain that I would not wish on anyone, not my worst enemy, and I never want to experience it again. One stormy night, in March of 2015, I was returning from one of my brothers' 25th surprise birthday parties. And I had been warned not to go because I had a surgery for my a corrective surgery on my eyes in January. So just 3 months prior. My children and I were in a situation where the passenger of my car that I was actually driving snatched the steering wheel on a slick blacktop road, not one time, but twice. But the second time that it was snatched, I wasn't able to correct the wheel and we began to flip. The car began to flip. We stopped as the car began its second flip by a telephone pole, and we were left resting on the driver's side. By the grace of God, no one was physically hurt and we survived, but this was the moment. That was the moment that I definitely started to rethink choices I had made and began to realize how not only were my actions of being promiscuous impacting me, they are also impacting my children. This is when I decided that I needed to sit down and reflect. It was time to look in the mirror and face myself. Now, that moment of stillness, I actually was celibate from about March of 2015, from that when that accident happened, to about November of 2017. And when I was saying that I needed to take some time to stop and look in the mirror, I didn't really have a thought process on, I'm just gonna stop and be celibate so that I can focus. You know, my eyes were definitely open to me being on a very dangerous and toxic road. And I think what motivated me to want to sit down and reflect was the fact that my kids, what I, you know, the things that I cherished and felt like were the answer to all I had been seeking, the love and affection, I'm now risking them and their lives. So, but I think that because it was outsiders, you know, that I had invited in causing us that pain, is how that ended up being celibacy. Like, you know, I didn't say, oh, well, you know, I'm just gonna sustain and not be engaged, because going through, I wasn't thinking that. I don't know. I'm sorry. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, a lot of times when you're in the midst of your storm, you don't always know what the cause is. So when I was deciding that I need to sit down and reflect, I didn't actually know that being celibate was going to be my way of the healing process.
I was just going to say, when you're in the midst of a storm and everything is so chaos around you and you're all wrapped up in that, you keep on going more and more to the outside, right? You keep on searching more on the outside, on the outside. You're looking for those answers. You're looking for those answers, right? And, but that's actually what just causes the storm and all of the friction to get even worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And we don't realize that. And especially when you're right in the middle of the storm, you're blinded by everything, but anybody else around you can see it.
They see it clear as day. And like as I was saying, but you're not listening to that. You don't want to hear
Nope,
that.
you're not listening. Because they don't know anything, right? They don't know nothing. They don't know anything about your life. And yeah, which also causes even more of the friction. Yeah. So during that time, from March 2015 to November 2017, that was your time of stillness, you said.
For
So how
sure.
did you fill your time with that? Basically, it's a year and a half.
Yeah, so most of the people I was interacting with, conversing with, weren't close. Like, if we were going to see each other in person, it's going to be a good 4 or 5 hour drive, making it more convenient, especially with me working and having small kids. I didn't have time to be on the road trips, and I definitely wasn't in a place where I was trusting you to come to visit us. So it was easier for me to make sure that whatever or whoever I was entertaining was miles away, hours away, so that I could focus more on getting to know them emotionally and psychologically, you know, actually getting re to know them and not having the closeness to be able to touch and interact.
So would you, at that time, would you deliberately, pick somebody that you might possibly have a relationship with, but you made sure that it was, I'm going to say, inconvenient for both of you.
Very much so. It was definitely intentional.
Oh, okay. So you deliberately did that then.
Yeah,
Okay.
because I figured out that that was my way of coping. You know, some people drink and, you
Yeah.
know, try to numb themselves. Some people smoke cigarettes, or, you know, people have different ways of coping. And society usually puts labels on addiction as, you know, alcohol and substances. And so being promiscuous was definitely my way of trying to cope.
Well, when I was in treatment, I was actually in treatment with an individual that was in there for sex addiction. So that was a real eye-opener for me, because him and I became very, very close friends while we were in there, and just talking. And it's so funny because, well, it's not funny, but all of our symptoms are the same.
Yep,
It's,
addiction is
you know, we all
addiction.
go through the withdrawals, you know, anxiety, depression, fear, of course. And it was just a real eye opener to see what someone else experiences with sex addiction. Because yeah, like I said, it's all the same. The only difference is the substance.
Right.
Because you don't hear anybody talk about a sex addiction ever. You always hear about a substance addiction, you know, whether it be drugs or alcohol, or you hear about gambling, shopping, but yeah.
It's a little easier to cover up. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not as obvious sometimes as, you know, if you're drinking, you see and recognize a drunk person. Someone right. using some type of substances, you see how their body language or speech or even their mobile activity, you see how it is impeded, you know, from certain substances. And then gambling, they usually will hit rock bottom and start to lose things. So the sexual activity is a little easier to hide.
Mm-hmm. And I just want you to know too, Camilla, that you're not the only one of my series here. You are not the only one that's actually speaking on sex addiction. In the future, I have got a gentleman from Australia that is coming on and talking about his sex addiction, which actually stems from him having ADHD. So that's also where that it has popped up for him too. That's one of his coping mechanisms was through sex addiction. So this series is definitely touching on that aspect of addiction too. So yeah, thank you for being so open and honest regarding, you know, that part of your life, which I'm sure is not easy for you to share. But like I said, we are not the only one. There are so many different areas in everybody's life that we are touching by telling our story.
It's actually much easier to talk about now since I'm not still in that place, or my life is not being subdued, you know, by trying to cope in those ways. So it's a lot easier to talk about since I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, because you're freed from it, right? And you have no shame attached to it anymore because you are talking about it. And that's the one thing people say to me, like, you talk so openly about everything. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm not fearful of my past anymore. There's no shame attached to it. It was a learning lesson for me. And I've gone forth and I've grown from that. And, yeah. You know, I want my children to know about my addiction. If anything, out of all of my whole life purpose, and I know, Camilla, you're going to feel the same way, is you don't want your children to go through what you experienced. They may very well, but at least you're going to recognize all these different signs and whatever's going on. So you are going to be there to help them, just like with my children. I just want them to be open and honest, but I also want them to look at me and know that I did everything possible that I could to make myself a better life. Also to make me a better mom, a better wife, a better friend, whatever I could possibly be, to find that greatness within me. And yeah, that's the whole purpose. Like, I just want my children you know, to look at me in the light of love, just like I look at them, and not be ashamed of my past either, which is huge. Don't you think? Like, it's huge.
Especially as parents, you know, we want our kids to look at us as the hero, that we've been so perfect and squeaky clean and not done anything wrong. And I say that because for sure, growing up, it was do what I say, not as I do. As I was saying before, you don't ask questions. So you may have saw some things that made you question or that you wondered about, but, you know, you didn't feel like you had enough psychological safety in order to do that. Mm-hmm. So with my kids, and I get feedback all the time from family members, like, oh, you tell them too much. Well, as you were saying, if I can tell you my real truth to prevent you from going down some of those same roads and having some of those same hurts, and more so because I'm not there anymore, I'm an open book. Sometimes they'll say, oh, I didn't need that, or oh, that was a little too much. But I'd rather tell you and you be aware than be blindsided.
Yeah. And another thing I can say too, which I know you're seeing within your children, is the fact that the more open that I am to them, the more open they are going to come to me about any situation that they need to talk to in life, because I want them to. I would rather listen to whatever they have to say instead of them suppress their feelings, because I want them to, you know, express their feelings. Too many of us for too many years have suppressed our feelings, and then that's what gets us into trouble. So, you know, tell me whatever you want. I can handle it. Believe me, I can handle it for all that I've gone through. Nothing's going to surprise me. So just be open and honest. And that's all I want for my kids.
Right. Yeah, because holding it in, we just become a ticking time bomb. And sometimes it's the smallest thing that'll set you off, and the people will feel like you overreacted, not knowing all that you've suppressed before you got to that point where you just couldn't hold it anymore.
For sure. So through that time of your stillness, what was the biggest thing that you learned about yourself? What was your whole learning lesson, looking back at everything?
There was a lot of personal growth, a lot of personal growth. And my the things my decisions and how I spent my, I guess, spare time became very personal. Not selfish, but very personal, because I needed to learn to love myself and I needed some self-worth. So I would, and through that, I was able to be more patient with myself, be more understanding of some of the decisions that I made, and able to redirect, get a game plan on how I was going to counteract some of the stuff that had gone on and was, like I say, impacting my children. Going back to where we were just talking about how once my eyes were open, I shared it with my kids. Now they were teenagers when I decided to share it, because in elementary school or wherever, that they're not totally savvy to what's going on, or have a, or even be able to understand some of the things that I was expressing. So during that time, I definitely learned to forgive myself, to love myself, and my worth.
Right. So what would be the biggest thing that you would want anybody out there that is in a relationship with someone that has got a sex addiction, or somebody that has a sex addiction? What, from all your experiences, what would you say to these people?
I want to challenge them. I would challenge them to stop living on survival mode, looking for that quick fix to just feel better for the moment, if you will. I know it's hard to trust others, but find someone that you can totally confide in. But until then, journaling is great. But to actually figure out why you're doing the things you're doing, and then to figure out a solution to that problem, a real solution to the problem, and not just a way of coping. Because when you do find that person that you can confide in, whether it's themselves who have been through it, or someone that they know, you find comfort in knowing that you're not the only one. And back to something we mentioned earlier, even if that person you confide in doesn't have the same addiction. Addiction is an addiction. The disease is the same. The vices you use to cope may be different, but the underlying problems and the way of coping and overcoming the processes are the same. So don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Find that person that you can trust and to talk to, because, like I say, we find comfort in knowing that we're not alone. And oh, well, maybe if the person you're talking to hasn't been there, maybe your story and you sharing with them will keep them from going down that path and experiencing as much trauma as you have experienced. But there's definitely comfort and encouragement talking with others and knowing that you're not the only one.
What people need to be informed regarding that too is there is something that triggered it. You have to find out what that trigger is. Like, you just don't become a sex addict, or you just don't become an alcoholic. There's always some underlying feeling that happened. And that's
Sometimes you have to go back as far as birth.
absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. And that's definitely where mine came in for sure. For sure. Right. So, and then just everything just got piled on top of it, right? Because I was born into a family of addiction with my father and the abuse. So there's, yeah, you got to go back to where the root problem is.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
because a lot of people have that mentality of, oh, I'm not reliving the past. And it's not that you're reliving it. You have to, like we were saying, you have to figure out what triggered you.
You have to
What
heal
is,
the past. You're not
yeah.
reliving it. You're healing it. So there is a definite difference there that people need to understand as well.
Yeah. But I hear that so often. I hear people say, oh, I'm not going to relive the past. So you are going to relive the past until you go and figure out what happened. What was the breaking
Absolutely.
point?
You are so correct on saying that. Absolutely, you are. Because if not, you just keep on running. Because if you're not willing to talk about it, Then you're running, you're hiding.
Yep.
Sure sign right there. If you're willing to talk about it, you've forgiven whatever it is, you've forgiven yourself, and you know, you've forgiven the other situations involved.
Oh, that's huge. Forgiving yourself. A lot of us
Absolutely.
With that.
Oh yeah, because if you don't forgive yourself, you cannot move on. And there will always be a shame attached to that if you don't forgive yourself. That
You're
was
right.
one of my biggest learning lessons in life, for sure.
You're right, you're right.
Absolutely, for sure. So now that you look back on this whole entire experience, where are you now in your life?
Right now, I'm actually happily married and being a mother, even though, like I was saying earlier, that I said, oh, I never want to love again. I never want this. I don't want to hurt again. But yes, September, Labor Day weekend will make 2 years that we've been married this time. I've been married this time. I'm able to talk with him about any and everything that's going on and not feeling ashamed or like I can't go to him with whatever it is that's going on. And just working on being a better version of myself every single day. And I'm learning that the more I talk, whether it's about that moment of stillness or day-to-day struggles, that I'm finding more often that I'm not alone. There's somebody close. I don't have to reach too far. It's able to relate and understand, and we can help and encourage each other through whatever the circumstance happens to be at that particular time.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true. Like, we are not alone. And it's just a matter of us putting ourselves out there to find the community that we really, really belong to. Because there's just so much fear, anxiety, and all of that out there. And once you just let that go, you are in that state of allowing and receiving, and all of these wonderful people will come to you. Like, I just look at my life now, and I've got like people from all over the world that are beyond amazing that are now becoming a part of my community. And I would have never, ever in a million years thought even 5 years ago that I would be at the state where I am now. And then like to be on Zoom, talking to all these people, having a podcast, a book, public speaker, like who would have ever thought that? And it was me having to let go. And that's no different than you now, you know? So with your final last words, what would you have to say?
I'm going to say, I hope that I'm not being inappropriate, but I actually want to share a scripture that I find very comforting whenever I'm struggling.
No, please share.
And it's going to be 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 4. And it says, he comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort each other. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. And I'm wanting to share that because the healing is definitely a process. It doesn't happen overnight, but you definitely deserve it. So just as I was saying before, stop living in survival mode. Open up your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Share your story, because there are others coming behind us that you could save from some of the traumas that you've already gone through. There are others that are currently in that storm now that you can help to strengthen and to come out of whatever the struggle may be.
That is so true. So, so true. And that what you said was absolutely beautiful, for sure. For sure.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm so blessed to have you on my program. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And the best part about it is, but you know what? I told you at the beginning, you know, like when you said you were so nervous, but you know what? This is such a very relaxed environment. And once you start doing it, you just kind of go with the flow you know, I'm there to help all of my guests out and just make them feel relaxed and at home and embrace them. And I'm so glad that you could share your story with all of us. And I am truly, truly blessed to have you a part of my journey. So I want to thank you so much, Kamala, for being on my program. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
So my closing words are, I want all of you who loved this podcast and my series to please subscribe. And I ask that you tell all of your friends to subscribe as well. I invite you to go to my website, shannonmondor.com, and check it out. And I want you to look at my one-on-one coaching and my Fulfillment in Faith program, which is a 6-month personal development program, which will absolutely change your life. And the best part about it is it's going to change your life totally and completely. And I get to work with you side by side for 6 wonderful months. And I so love doing that. So it's amazing to see people absolutely transform and change their lives and become that person that they always wanted to be. So I want to thank you one more time, Kamala. And I want to thank everybody for listening to this podcast. And I just want everybody to have an absolutely amazing day. Thank you. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.